Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today on our show, very excited, we have Matt Marash. Hi Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us. We're obviously very excited to chat.
Very, very.
Do you mind, for those of our listeners who may not know you, can you give us a background on who you are and how you got into photography?
Sure. So, yeah, I am a film shooter. I've been really specializing in like the large format side of things, probably for the better part of the last 10, 11 years. It's every time I look, it's longer and longer, which is just, it's crazy.
Right. I know.
Photography is like my one hobby that I've just like kept, you know, like it's easy to like cycle through quick things, but then like photography always kind of keeps you coming back. But anyway, I was shooting film hardcore for, I don't know, like 6 months. I was getting really, really into it. And I started just listening to these crazy guys based out of New Jersey doing what were some of the very early episodes of the Film Photography Podcast. I didn't think much of it, but it was just crazy. There was zany sound effects, just a lot of cool back and forth. And I started writing into those guys. And we hit it off. My girlfriend at the time, fiance now, Lauren, won a giveaway from them. I went to collect the giveaway prize. I met them at the PDN Photo Plus Expo. And from there, they asked me to come back on the show. And before I knew it, I was like a part of this show that I was just early fan of. It's kind of weird.
That is crazy. I love that.
Yeah, I didn't know that that's how you got involved. That's so cool.
Yeah, I kind of like really just nudged my foot in the door more and more each time. And I was just really jazzed about it. And I had a job that was like traveling at the time. So I had the ability to kind of like go 8-9 hours in the car and go see some folks and record a podcast. And that's actually how I did it for the first few years.
Wow.
We really didn't start doing remote stuff until right before the pandemic started.
Wow.
I didn't realize that. I thought you guys were always like all in the studio.
Yeah, we'll still, now we'll do like segments that are kind of like gang in the studio, folks in the field sort of thing. But most, the best shows, like all the hits, those are the best ones. When you're in the studio, you have that rapport, there's stuff on the table like snacks and film cameras. So I've been kind of eat, sleeping, breathing photography. When I'm not doing any of this stuff, I work at a camera shop and I develop all their film, I run their darkroom, I teach classes, and then like that YouTube thing too. So I'm just kind of got my fingers all in film photography.
I love that. What did you go to school for photography too? I think I heard you had a professor. Did you, was that?
I did not go to school for photography. I took one digital class after I got my camera and I really, really took to it. And he noticed I really took to it and I was interested in film. So he kind of granted me darkroom access without having to take the class.
Nice.
So I was like a kid on their super senior year of college with free time and no responsibility for money. So that was the perfect equation to just like go hard into film photography.
That's a score if I've ever heard one. I'm so jealous.
I've told the story about how I was in community college just doing like basic studies and I took the one photo class and then I was like, can I take it again? They're like, no.
What?
Nope.
And their darkroom was, you know, obviously it was great. It was like huge space and like, that's great that he let you sneak that in because I wish I could have.
I think the timing was also right for it too, though, because this was like 2009, 2010, film photography and darkrooms were, they were, you know, it was just a dust bowl in their most days.
We
didn't fill up the class. Very few people were genuinely interested. This, like, the mentality at the little liberal arts college I went to was, oh, this was just like a cut class. You didn't really have to worry about it. You show up, you take some pretty pictures, and that's it. But I wanted to do something more with this. And at the time, I was also the student photographer. So I'd had a camera for like 3 or 4 months. I'd shot thousands of RAW files. I had no idea what the hell to do. But I started noticing, like, I wanted to show up more places with the camera. And I got a job for the school. So I would go to events and take pictures, go to basketball games, volleyball games. I went to a school that has, like, horses, like dressage events. So I got kicked out of horse arenas and stuff. all sorts of things. But in like less than 6 months of just showing up with a camera in my hand, I had gained more access to events and people and just experiences that I hadn't in 4.5 years of working my butt off prior. It kind of like rubbed off on me differently. And I was like, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep seeing where the camera can take me.
So if you didn't take that class, were you like just kind of experimenting in the darkroom and kind of teaching yourself? Or was there people to kind of guide you a little bit?
There was definitely people to guide me. So my college professor, Professor Jeff, he was the guy that really kind of noticed I was into this stuff. And he was like my digital one professor. And he also noticed, like, I was already doing all the things that they kind of let you get to, you know, get to in that course. So shooting raw, editing, knowing composition. I just had that from muscle memory from shooting 50,000 pictures the summer before, that repetition. So he kind of noticed I was into that. And then I had taken a few international trips, and coming back from like a second trip to Japan, I'm a huge like anime nerd, by the way. So that was also has always been like an underlying thing. I came back from that second trip and I noticed all of these amazing photographers were still shooting with this film stuff. And I went to a few like high end camera stores, like Map Camera and Bic Camera. And I noticed, I was like, I want one of these Hasselblads. And then I told my professor Jeff, and he's like, oh, this thing. And he just had one in his office.
Nice.
I'm like, you got to show me how this stuff works. So I picked up a Hasselblad. And like, it's all downhill from there, you know, the same old film photography story. Like,
Yeah. So during this time, was that when you got into large format, or is that something that kind of came later on?
No, it was right on schedule with that. So I maybe had the Hasselblad. So like the timeline here is like, I picked up a digital camera in 08. It was less than 9 months before I was like, not burned out, but like, I couldn't figure out why my pictures looked like all the other pictures taken with the same digital camera being uploaded, because the raw format wasn't refined yet. We didn't know if we were supposed to edit our stuff a lot or just shoot more and buy more stuff. So then I bought that Hasselblad within like a year. And then 6 months into that Hasselblad, I was forcing myself to shoot a roll of film a week. So Jeff gave me like a brick of like this old Portra, which is like, you know, $20,000 now or whatever.
Right.
I know, Kodak film prices. But he gave me this film and then darkroom access. And I just kind of went by the data sheets and stuff. And it was like easy sailing. And it was probably 6 or 7 months into doing that with the Hasselblad that the other professor who was working at Finley at the time, Spencer, he was getting ready to get rid of, like literally throw away his old 8x10 camera kit, which was this Eastman Commercial B, this magnesium monster of a camera. And I was like, what is this? You got to let me know what this is. He's like, oh, this? Well, I was about to throw it out. I'll tell you what, want to shoot it, you just have to buy film for it and I'll get you started with the rest. And I'm like, done. So I like went on B&H and I overnighted some film. And like 2 days later, he was showing me like the basics and that was it. Like I was gone from that point.
Yeah.
So what were the film 8x10 film prices back then? Were they still pretty steep back then, or is it or are you kind of missing those days?
I am very much missing those days. I would give up a lot to get back to that. But like at the same time, I had no idea what I was doing, and you know, you always feel like, oh, I wasted this, and there's that evergreen feeling with photographers that you always want to go back and do things you did, but then you probably wouldn't do those things because your tastes are different. But I think an 8x10 box of T-Max, so 10 sheets of T-Max 400, was like $50.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
So it's like quadrupled.
Would you ever want to torture yourself, log into your B&H account and just go back to your old purchases and just have a good cry? It's, yeah. Geez, $50. Wow.
Yeah, I remember I added a box of, this is the really painful part. I bought that box, but I didn't get the $100 free shipping. So I ordered some boxes of FP100C and a pro pack of T-Max and 120 in order to hit free shipping, which, I mean, that's what really just kicks me in the butt.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's just so funny to me. So the large format, I've very excited to have you on the show for lots of reasons, but the large format stuff, the YouTube channel is phenomenal, by the way.
Yeah, agreed.
When you started that, because I kind of went back and saw that you, I mean, same thing for me. I had my channel like 10 years ago and uploaded like 2 videos. It meant nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, let me get back to this. Did you go into it with the idea of, because it's very educational, which I think is so great, especially for a large format, because I've talked about this on the show many times that I've been so intimidated by large format to the point where I've like, I used to put it up like, that's not for me. I can't do, like, it's too scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where did that all come about?
So it's funny you should mention, yeah, like having the super, super old like videos on the YouTube channel. Cause like my old stuff was just like shot with my phone. And so the whole reason I even did those original phone and like 5D Mark II, I have no idea what the hell I'm doing uploads. The idea behind those is the same idea behind the channel now, but really the biggest barriers were like skill set for like the cameras, like the tech side, video editing, and then just like the ability to deliver it, the dialogue. So I still wasn't really used to doing the podcast format. So, you know, presenting things to people over the air on the podcast, that's a skill, being able to do that with minimal vocalized pauses and just kind of tell a story. But then also speaking to people uninterrupted on the camera and being able to do minimal cuts. So that skill didn't really come into play until I started teaching classes for the camera store I work for. So it all just kind of like ties in. But I've always wanted to do the educational side of things, because when I got started in large format, it was basically stories that I got from my other professor, Spencer, like small little anecdotal things on how to pick this up and that up. And then, okay, here's your required reading books. Go through those. Yeah. And here's some forums, and anybody you reach out to in real life is generally not going to give you the time of day. That was kind of the atmosphere just a few short years ago. And I would imagine it still feels that intimidating to folks. And it really like shouldn't, because I don't know. I think they're the simplest kind of cameras. Like there's just nothing to them. There's no electronics. You're not going to hurt it unless you're like termites, and it's
right,
fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, that's so true. I didn't even think of that too, with just the podcast and all that stuff, of how it all kind of comes together. And it's a big practice too for all that. Like I think of that because I get the honor and pleasure of editing this podcast, so I can kind of make myself sound however I want. But that's great. And one thing that popped in my head while you were explaining that is something I was talking to one of my coworkers. I work at a music store, and they're having problems getting, you know, younger generations of people into the repair of musical instruments and stuff like that. And I'm talking like fixing a French horn if it's broken. Mm-hmm. You know, like we're just getting to that point where all the people that are around that fix these things are not either passing their trade on, or people are just not interested in it. And it just scares me so much that we're going to get to a point where it's like, you know, your HASI breaks down. What do you do? You know, like what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But I don't know how I got on this tangent, but it I just wanted to thank you for your teaching aspect, because you got it. You have that charisma. I'm not exactly sure the name of it is. It's the
charisma.
whatever the teachers have to keep you kind of hooked into the thing. Because I catch myself, you know, watching things that you make, and even if it's like 8x10, and I'm, you know, I don't even have an 8x10 camera, but you learn so much from stuff like that, even coming from that into things. I don't know. It's just cool. And
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
It really is, especially like for at least for me, like with one of my 2022 goals is to like take. I used to go to seminars all the time back in the day when I was like shooting weddings and stuff, and I miss just like, you know, it's you're doing it for all these years, but still like there's more stuff to learn, you know, and like I shouldn't feel intimidated by something just because I'm in my head, you know, like there's so many great places to learn specifically your channel about large format. So yeah, I just thank you for that because I'm excited to like, I was watching some of the videos. I'm like, I'm going to take notes. I'm going to get a notebook here. And
yes.
I'm like,
do it.
Really do it. Cause you should see me, Matt, with my 4x5. I'm like, okay, I got to close the shutter. And I'm like freaking out before it. And everybody's like, calm down. Like, you don't have to rush. I'm like, oh yeah, I don't have to rush. I can just do this, you know, but
that's all right. Yeah. Just relax and do the dance. Yeah.
Relax and do the dance is one of the things I picked up from the channel. And I'm like, yeah, I need to just kind of like chill, you know, but I'm so like, I'm shooting large format.
That's why I'm huge on the whole practicing aspect of it, because it is so different than all the other workflows you do. Like the closest thing to it is like setting up some sort of like ridiculous streaming iPad apparatus, because it's just so like goofy and obnoxious that you really do need to practice it. And the first time I read that, I was like, really? Set this thing up 100 times and not take a picture? And as dumb as it sounds, it is so, so helpful. Because, and if you can do this with anything, like try to chop an onion, you know, get a sack of onions, you know, from the local farmer's market and just start cutting them until you are good. Like, that's the only way these chefs on TV are good with a knife.
It's
and
true.
You won't hurt yourself. You have to practice this stuff. And it's, of course, we all want like the easy way to get really nice, acceptable results really quickly. Yeah. But that really deep learning stuff comes after everything else. The stuff that you were initially worried about is just like muscle memory. And then you can really start to make the work happen. And oh yeah, there's a ground glass. I can use this for composition. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I remember how to take pictures. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's really what happens when you throw like a new thing in the way. You're like so buzzed on, oh my gosh, they're doing the new thing. I'm finally doing it. But yeah, then we still have to like make pictures.
Yeah, there's that part.
Also like making mistakes too. You get bummed out sometimes. Like I was on a photo walk, hangout with a bunch of friends, and we were all taking pictures of each other. And I took four portraits, and all but one came out. But that one that came out was like chef's kiss. I was like, oh man, like I'm going to nail this because this is really different and really cool, you know?
And that's still a good hit rate. Like people think like, oh, you took two, but you lost one of them. Like, so you still got one great picture you're not going to remember those. Those fails will like, they'll still like haunt you a little bit, but you're gonna hit a few of those. Probably the hardest thing I think with the bigger and bigger films is there's less stuff. So less of the cool old emulsions. So if you have like a box of really expired stuff, that's where like I have two boxes that just sit at the bottom of the freezer. And I'm just like, okay, I'm definitely going to do a special project for this. But now I'm just like, I'm setting myself up for failure. I'm like,
right.
I'm saving it for this project that's never going to come because I'm too afraid to touch this film. But it's just getting worse by the second. Yeah. So yeah.
That is, you just hit the nail on the head, man. I have so much it's like film and stuff. I'm like, I'm going to save this for like the best thing ever. And then I'm like, this isn't the best thing. That's not the best thing. This isn't the best thing either. Like, and then it just sits there. And what's the point of that? You know?
Yep.
Man.
Yeah. So true.
I want to talk to you about your job too, because I probably listened to, you know, the Film Photography Project podcast. That was my Tuesday night ritual for, you know, probably 4 years now. And it's just to hear about, I used to love hearing about you working there because it's, what is it? Midwest Photo Exchange. Is that what it's called?
Yep. Midwest Photo. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just sounds like such a cool place. Cause I think Matt Day visited it a couple times on his channel. So I got to see it through there and,
cool. And
it was just always fun because you work in the dark room, right? Isn't that's what you said at the beginning, that you teach classes and stuff. Have you been teaching classes since the COVID thing? Is it coming back around? Like, how's that been?
It's been pretty good. So yeah, I've been doing classes at MPEX since the end of 2016. So this is like my sixth year I'm going into for teaching. It's funny because when I interviewed there initially, they're like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. I think I want to teach photography. And they're like, well, we don't do classes. And it's like, okay, well, we'll see about that. And then they started doing more classes and I ended up on the sales team. And then just kind of, it was a really nice, like natural progression from one to the other. But working at the camera store has all sorts of benefits, but it is also retail. So like, it's a constant tug of war because like, I don't mind doing the sales thing. I've been a salesman since before I've even been into cameras, which right. is that's all part of like delivery and stuff as well. But learning how to talk to somebody about selling a camera is usually two parts education and one part like closing a sale anyway. So you can pick up those little strategies, try to listen enough to somebody to figure out, you know, what they're trying to do. The hardest part about the camera store is realizing that like less than 1% of the people that walk through the door feel the way about photography that the real hardcore nerds do, especially when it comes to like film. So that part is like different, but it's cool because you're enabling creativity, even if it's somebody that's like they're working for a car dealership and they're doing like car walkthroughs. It's like, well, how can we make this car walkthrough look badass, you know? okay, you can't. There's 10 million of them, but like you can you can at least make the quality look a little bit better. And now it's like not even that because they're doing that with like a phone now. So it's like, what's the next kind of level? It's a podcast. It's a vlog. It's a series of multi-platform content creation. But anyway, with the classes, that's it started like just doing digital classes, like teach somebody how to get out of auto. And I'm really just kind of building up the same way I kind of learned through my DSLR and in a little bit with how I learned in my one like digital class, because our digital class was basically just straight from one of the books for digital that like everybody gets, and it worked pretty well. But like at the same time, there was zilch creativity. It's like, okay, let's get you to the point where you understand the relationship that's going on with like your big three, your aperture, shutter speed, your ISO, and nothing like beyond that. So as time went on, we had more and more opportunities for classes. And then at the end of middle of 2016, Midwest Photo moved to a new location. And that new location, they asked me if I wanted to help them build a darkroom space in there, which...
so cool.
Yes. So...
yeah. Don't twist my arm.
Yeah. The only downside, and this was a big downside, years of working in this closet here have prepared me for what they asked me next. Okay, so what if we had space but no budget? What can you do with that? So I'm like leveraging all of my sales experience to try and talk schools and local, like other local community things to like give me their old darkroom stuff. So we got a sink from the local, you know, Christian middle school. We got an enlarger from one of the local photographers who works ASMP. So it's just like, now I'm just gathering all of this stuff in there, brokering deals. Okay, well, your students can use it on this weekend. Like really just wheeling and dealing to get all this stuff. Yeah. And we got the darkroom put together. And they're like, okay, so how do we make money with this? I'm like, oh my God. Okay. So, well, I know how to process black and white film, so we can start doing black and white. And film had like, this was the point at which like, you know, Matt Day videos are starting to pick up. So like, there's a little bit of traction. People are asking more about stuff. He plugged the shop in there, and we had the enlargers and stuff. And I did a few classes on it, but nothing like really, really big. It wasn't until right around lockdown time when the film photography just curved, just shot into the stratosphere.
Yeah, crazy.
And you know, it hasn't come down since. So the cool thing is having all access to the toys, like I'm using here and talking here, is another kind of component of that. Like there is no way on planet Earth I would know how to use the latest and greatest tools or like have access to them for like rentals, et cetera, if it wasn't for the camera shop. So the only downside about how I've set things up is it all kind of has to be there to work. So, you know, the podcast works, the channel works, work works because I can kind of borrow all those tools together.
That's great. That's though. I had no idea how this was like all on your shoulders. I didn't realize that. I thought maybe it was, you know, there and you started working there kind of thing. That's really cool to hear that. I didn't know that. That's really neat.
It's nerve-wracking at times, but it's just cool to see that like there is a payoff to it. And you know, I'm not responsible any bit for that payoff, but it's like it was established when people were asking for it. And I think that's the other big thing too.
Right.
A lot of folks will only ever see, oh man, isn't that cool that this, you know, such and such took off. It's like, yeah, it was here. People just, they just noticed it. Now it's the same phrase I see every day. Someone's walking through the store and like, oh wow, I didn't even know you guys were here. Yeah, we've been here 32 years. Yeah. So it's the same kind of vibe.
Right.
Very cool.
What's the range of classes you teach there? Is it start like beginners with, is it mostly film? Is there some digital, large, like what's the gamut of?
Yeah, it's like 65% digital now. So it's mostly still the entry level stuff. So like this actually right now is like crunch time season where everybody just got their new camera. Everybody wants to learn everything about photography. Right now, I've got 30 minutes. Let's go. at least that's everybody who walks into the store and buys the camera. Well, it's like easy, right? I mean, I paid the money, so it's got to be like really easy. I just see all these other people doing it. It's like, it's come on.
Uh-huh.
Like, yeah. No.
So most of it's digital, but now there's a good, healthy demand for film. We bought a color processor at the store, and I think they just got they've got a Ritsu on the way for like scanning roll film. So like they're really, really picking up with that. And it's so cool to see that like the average film shooter is 10 years younger than I am or more.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's
I was going to say,
all
or more.
Folks.
So yeah, you said during the pandemic, it just like skyrocketed. I mean, do you guys still have like a decent used like film camera section, or are you guys like wiped dry all the time now because everybody needs cameras?
So our used section has never been bigger, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the used film stuff is like gangbusters. It's probably doubled in inventory since things started. And it also helps that like the used manager and I, we've kind of worked at Midwest Photo like forever now. So we have a good rapport back and forth. And he's like, he's a record guy. So like he gets
okay.
So he appreciates the same kind of thing. He can kind of see when things are coming up in popularity. But every week we just like, it's not even like a meeting. We just like get together and we're like, did you see this price? Yeah. Did you see this? This guy got $10,000 for a Mamiya 7. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. Wow. What do we do about this? So we're like always talking about, okay, what's market value right now on these things? So it's kind of interesting. Like it's, I don't know, I guess I am involved in almost every step of the process. The only thing I don't do is like moonlight at a coding facility. Otherwise that'd be it.
What's it like been like watching the market fluctuate?
Oh,
I guess it really hasn't been fluctuating. I guess it's been on, just on its
just
way.
Yeah,
out.
It's just a straight line trajectory.
Yeah.
Buy M6s, buy them now. It's like, it makes me sick to my stomach at like a personal level, but then it kind of steals my resolve to do more to enable folks, because I think that's where the larger gap is now. Now there's real money on the line. When I was getting into it, people were literally throwing away stuff. So I could like experiment freely. Now people are spending a lot more of their hard earned money and they want maybe not a sure thing, but a lot of people would rather spend more to get something that they're fairly certain is going to get them quality results faster. And they'll also value what they put into it, both film-wise, lens-wise. Wow. So I think that makes it even more important to have access to the information that's, you know, available. And there's almost 200 years of it. It's just all out in the ether, and, you know, bringing it together for specific topics and in different channels is a great way to learn.
Man, I used to love on the FPP when you would talk about like the hottest trends of cameras, like what it was just like, you know, the FM2s are going out crazy right now. So, you know, it's just crazy to hear that. And I kind of calmed down in the last year of buying gear. I mean, we talk about it a million times on this show, just like we're gear hounds, you know, like we're sniffing it out all the time, trying to find the, you know, the next cool camera to use. And it's been actually a pretty calming thing for me to like focus on three or four different cameras instead of 300 different cameras now. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I just always get scared that eventually cameras are going to run out and film companies aren't going to be putting out film anymore. Do you feel that
being
in like that? Because you're like, you're in the sales department of that. Do you see any slowing down, you think, in the near future, or do you think we're okay for a while?
I think we've got a few more years. You know, the big question, and Casey, my use manager. Hey, Casey, if you're watching this, our conversation is okay. Has this wave crested? Are we there yet? Are we there? Like, it's a question we ask ourselves once a week. And I don't think we're there yet, but certain things have more, I don't know, certain things have more weight on people's decision making. Like the price increase, that immediately shut down some like 18-year-olds, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like there's
yeah.
definitely some high school kids that like don't want to do this now because it's not attainable. One of I know this because one of my cousins has been texting me. I saw him at Christmas for the first time. He's like taller than me now, and he's asking about film cameras. He's like, "Hey, Aunt Judy says you shoot film cameras." I'm like, "Yeah, here, just type my name in." And he was like, "Oh my
yeah,
god,
where you been?"
Yeah. So like now he's listening to FPP and like sending me memes and stuff and like asking, "Oh, what do you think about this one? What do you think about the AE-1?" I'm like, "Yeah, just don't worry. Here, just stop. I'll send you a camera and here's some film. Let's get you going." But like that was, you know, that's his barrier. I can tell he's already got the film sweats and he hasn't even shot a frame yet. So like having a resource to kind of help guide you through that, I think is more important now than it was. And it's not the fact that like there's not a premium on the information, but it's having it from a source that can put you like you guys mentioned, put you at ease with, "Oh, okay, no, this is cool. I can do this. All right. Yeah. Let's give it a shot."
Right.
And the thing that I also have to remind myself every time I put out something that is there to help folks is they may not have those same tools. I would say 60% of the folks that watch Large Format Fridays or any of the live streams or TikTok especially, most of them aren't from the United States. Most of them are over in Europe. I have some crazy reach for places that I've never been. I don't know if they have community dark rooms or some places where folks are watching this stuff. They don't even have camera stores. Camera dealers won't sell things because they can't maintain their map pricing because the economy is like they expect there to be a little back and forth. So they just won't sell there. It's interesting to see how quickly film photography has changed because of its like popularity. And I think we have a few solid years left before we really need to start like panicking and like coating our own plates and paper and stuff. I think I said this on FPP a while ago. I don't know where I said it first, but it stays true. Watch motion picture. Once motion pictures are no longer being stored and shot on film, mainly stored, that's when we're in trouble. Because for every, like, if I bought a palette of 8x10 Portra, that's nothing compared to storing the raw footage from a Chris Nolan film.
Right. Yeah. Well, the thing about that is I think a lot of people in Hollywood have gotten the film bug too, and they want to shoot specifically on film.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's a good point that, like, just if all of a sudden people stop wanting to do that, then we might be in trouble.
Yeah.
Do you think that, here's another question, you may or may not have any thoughts on this, but do you think the film camera bubble will pop? Do you think offloading and everything's going to get cheaper again?
Jeez, I feel like if I give any more advice, I'm going to have to lead off with a tweet in the morning that says GM. I don't think, I mean, what goes up must come down. I think we're going to start to see waning popularity. I think if these companies, if like Kodak, Fuji, Ilford keep doing like these big, like they make a lot of noise. Like I think the hype around what are normally innocuous price increases, I think that does more bad than good. Kind of the same thing with like that we've been seeing with Nikon for the last 3 years. Like literally everything I read about Nikon is, this is terrible, these guys are going down. Like just that kind of negative feedback loop it's become a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy. So I think if we talk about the inevitable pop of the bubble, it's just going to make it happen faster than just kind of letting people ride that wave, get that expensive point and shoot, and then realize the electronics may go bad on it within a couple of years. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I know that really hurt, Chris. I didn't mean to.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. It's okay.
No, it's funny because my contacts, the readout on the inside is gone. Like it doesn't even work anymore. And I'm just any day now, she's going to go.
It's on life support, huh? Jeez. So interesting. I just, watching it from like where you started or where I started or where Timothy started. Yeah. And like where it is now across every board, mm-hmm. you know, like just pricing, camera pricing, but also like who's shooting. You know, there was a time when I thought it was just me. Like I thought I was like,
I remember, you know, those days. Yeah.
Go to jobs and be like, I'll shoot it on film. And they'd be like, oh, whoa. And now they're like, okay. So like, what does that mean for me? Like, Oh, never mind.
Yeah, what is it like out there? How many, is it like a 50-50 split now for hanging out at events and shows? Or?
Well, I will tell you, when I go, just walk around LA, I go to this flea market every Sunday almost. And just the like you were talking about, the amount of young people with some sort of camera around their neck, like, is astounding.
That is cool. Yeah.
It makes me happy because I'm, you know, I obviously we all love it. So I'm just like, you know, you're one of us. Like, what do you got? Let's talk about it. Like,
yeah.
So
do you think with the effects of, like, just what we were talking about film, kind of, if it's up and it's a big... Dave, every time we talk about this stuff, I think of when Dave Bias was on the show the first time, Film Ferrania, you know, Dave mm-hmm. Bias, he was mm-hmm. just like, it's called the dead cat bounce. And he was saying that the first time, and we've been doing this show for 5 years, you know what I mean? This was year one. He was like our sixth guest or something like that. And he was saying that the cat is bouncing right now and that eventually it's going to come to a skid. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that cat is higher than it ever was, bouncing up off the ground than it has been.
Soaring.
Yeah, he's just flying right now. But does the knowledge of what you know of the future of film photography and stuff like that, does that affect how you shoot, though? Because you shoot like an obscure, you're shooting like 8x10, 4x5, like all that mm-hmm. stuff. Does that affect how you shoot, like when you shoot that and how you shoot it? Or do you just kind of, you're just rolling with it? Because like...
Yeah, that's a really good question. I try not to let it affect how I shoot. The honest truth is, if I keep shooting at the rate I do, I'm not going to have to worry about, like, I'm more worried about expiration dates than I am about the film. That's the other thing about having surrounded myself in the industry for way too long I have accumulated. I will not burden anybody with the knowledge of how much film there is.
I can only imagine.
I do not have cameras. I seriously have, hold on, let's count them. I've got like one digital camera, a phone, a K1000, a Hasselblad, an Olympus XA, and an 8x10, and I guess the 8x20. But like that's less than 10 cameras. People think I have a lot of cameras because I talk about a lot of them, but it's really just the access. Most of these cameras I'm talking about are transitory in nature. Like they will be moving on to new homes and such. But the film, that is what is always needed to make things happen. And I learned that from Professor Jeff a long time ago. If you have you find a film and you feel like you can understand it and make good work with it, just buy as much as there is.
Yeah,
dude, amen.
It's only ever going to go up in price, so just get it while you can. And I've noticed freezing a lot of the film; it doesn't seem to matter. I'm working on a piece right now on expired film for the channel. I shot some film. This young lad Jesse, he came up from Kentucky a couple weeks back. And he brought some film, some Tri-X that expired in 1982. So the film was coded in 79. Wow. And I was able to make good printable negatives from that film. So like, I'm not so worried about the film and the availability of it because I've already got like my main tools. And I've had those for like the exception of a few small pieces. My kit really hasn't changed in like 8 or 9 years. And that's such a relieving feeling because once the burden of that, the gear, is out of the way, you can start making cool stuff. Like I feel when I'm out in the field, it is I know this sounds stupid, but it's as easy for me to like take out my phone and take a snapshot as it is to like set up my 8x10 and get viewing with that right away. So I try, gear comes easy to me. The tech stuff comes very easy to me. But the creation part's the hard part. So if I can get rid of that extraneous stuff, or at least like the intrusive thoughts of you're going to screw up this thing, you're going to ruin this piece of gear, I'll be making things faster. Yeah.
What's your favorite thing to shoot?
I'll also use a phrase from my professor, Jeff, in his words, frickin' trees.
I love trees.
He loves, tree love guys trees. Over here. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah, rocks, water, trees, like your Weston kind of special. I love that kind of stuff. I have an appreciation for nature. I like to go out and hike. Yeah. And, you know, the other part, a lot of people don't get this about hauling around a big field camera. It's a workout plan and it's cheaper than a gym membership. A gym membership is a box of film a month. And when you kind of, you have to do all sorts of mental gymnastics to justify these things. But at least my mental gymnastics do have some small savings in other aspects of my life. So I'll keep using them.
Yeah, just track it on your fitness app or whatever.
Exactly. Oh, I stopped doing the steps tracker just because like it was making me sick, because working retail in this giant, you know, warehouse, like it is easy to hit a few miles. Like even in the dark room, I'm just like pacing back and forth, waiting for agitation cycles. I can get my steps in.
I love that. Another thing I just saw recently on your channel, you were assisting a photographer, Tariq, I think his name was.
Oh, my good buddy Tariq. Yeah.
Yeah. Loved all of the congresswoman photos that you guys did. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. That was getting me jonesing to be like, all right. do you assist folks a lot, or is that kind of a one-off, or do you plan on doing more of that in the future?
I've been helping out. Well, I've been assisting for other photographers here in Columbus probably since I got here. That was the easiest way to network is to be a grip, be a fly on the wall, wrap cables, tape stuff down. So try not to say no to anything. Bring up, you know, start by bringing them coffee, whatever you need to do. Now, in the case of Tariq, we're totally best buds now. We have a connection that goes back to the very beginning of like the camera store too. So his mentor is like a huge leader in the Somali community. He's actually in Minneapolis now. And that's Abdi Roble. He's also a fantastic street photographer, big Leica guy. You'd love his work, black and white. So Abdi used to work at Midwest Photo ages ago, like 20, 30 years ago. And he stopped into the store to buy his brick of Acros that he buys like every year. And he brought in Tariq, who was kind of his understudy. And so they're both Somali refugees and they shoot a lot with like black and white and Leicas, the whole deal. But he noticed that I was a film guy and I was working over near the large format cameras. And he asked me, what I do, how long I've been doing it. And it was like an arranged marriage. He's like, you two be friends. And we just started hanging out more and shooting together. And like, whenever Tariq is doing something and I'm not going to be in the way, I try to be there, because just being around Tariq makes me a better portrait photographer. Like, my best tip for somebody that's not sure what they want to do photographically, hang out with photographers that do things that you look up to. And with Tariq, he's just a master of light and portraiture. So I want to be good at that. So I got to hang out with Tariq.
Amazing.
That name is so familiar. If you're an FPP listener too, you bring up that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love
We've been hanging out since probably 2013, 2014. But he's like the man. And he's so low key about things because he's kind of integrated photography with his lifestyle a little bit differently, because he is a refugee and he works with the refugee community. His whole thing is to find gainful employment for refugees and stable housing. And he has just this level of access and trust amongst multiple communities that just, the work speaks for itself. So definitely recommend checking out Tariq's work, tariqterry.com. It's just awesome.
Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes too. So good. Do you shoot? I saw you doing on TikTok. You were doing some. Why is the name blanking from my mind?
Oh, the Hasselblad?
No. Alternative process stuff, like the way you were doing the prints and stuff. How did you get into that stuff? Was that something you just were interested in and was like, let's just do it? Or were you kind of, is that back in the school days or?
Oh, no,
because I'm a big alternative process guy. I love that stuff.
I think alt process definitely goes hand in hand with like old hippie college professors and like old film cameras. Like they are a match made in heaven. The only thing you need is like an old record too. So my professor Spencer, the guy that had the 8x10, he loaned me my first 8x10 camera. I eventually loaned it back or got it back to him. Better shape and all that stuff. But anyway, he kind of told me, oh, yeah, when you have a negative this big, enlarging it's kind of a pain, but you can also do this. And he showed me some like old Van Dyke Browns that he'd made in like the 70s. I'm like, this is amazing. Cool. Are you kidding me?
Wow.
And then he told me about, I think it was the Christopher James book. So I picked up a few alt process books. I found alternativephotography.com, which is just like a super awesome resource, the encyclopedia. And actually you mentioned alternative process. I was actually doing calotype prints live here today. So I know the folks at home can't see this, but this is an 8x10 calotype.
Gorgeous.
From a negative. I actually made this negative while I was filming an episode of LFF it's like 2020. But then I like printing from it, and I did like a little giveaway thing on the live stream today. And so I'm here in the darkroom, and there's dry prints right behind me.
I love it.
Love it. Ugh. So good.
Oh, but alt process and large format go hand in hand because alternative processes much of the time are UV-based processes and they're contact printing processes, mm-hmm. meaning your original is going to be your, you know, your final size unless you do like a digital negative. And when I was getting into this stuff, digital negatives were a thing, but they weren't very good and they weren't very good with all the different light sources. So I started reading up and getting all the resources for measuring out the density of my negatives and, you know, all the techie stuff for testing. But I was like, okay, in the future, I want to do this more when I know I have more time, but I want to tune my process into it right now. So my process has always been a little extraneous, like, oh, why would you go to all this effort? But then now every single negative in my library, save for a few weird films, I can make these dual purpose prints from. I can do silver, I can do alt process, and they scan, they're kind of grainy when they scan, but that's whatever. If you're viewing on the website, that's not the print.
Yeah, no, so yeah, true. Yeah. Oh, I just would love to, I need to somehow figure out how I'm going to budget 8x10 into my life. I'm getting to that that point where I'm ready.
The next step.
Yeah, I'm ready to start going down that road.
Have you been shooting a lot of 4x5 recently, Timothy?
The Lomo Graflock instant back. I am now going to. I actually yesterday, that was on my list of things to do, was to load some 4x5 holders. So that's what's coming up. There's this house that's at this graveyard that it's just a perfect, like, you're into trees. There's the weeping willow trees hanging there.
I can already see it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. you know, I've hesitated from shooting it with, you know, medium format or 35 just because I know that's not it. It needs to be mm-hmm. on 4x5. So that's next. I'm just waiting for like a nice day and, you know, the weather to be right and all that. There's no leaves on the trees, so it's a summertime shot. But I'm gonna be burning some film. I have a ton of 4x5 film because I'm a hoarder, just like, you know, the rest of us on here.
Yeah,
I'll be okay. We'll be right back with a couple listener questions for Matt right after this message from our sponsor. Just wanted to pop in quick and let you know about our Patreon only develop and hang nights. We've done a bunch already. We hang out, we develop some film, we talk shop, we laugh. It's a good time. If that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Patreon is the best way to help support the show. Thanks, guys. All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we break off and take a couple questions from our listeners. The first question comes from DS Blair Photos, and they wanted to know, what is the first two tips you give a large format newbie? It says, I've got the setup, but just haven't hit the shutter.
Oh, this is a fantastic question, mm-hmm. and one I get asked a lot. And I would say, I think we hinted at this like a little bit earlier, but my first big piece of advice, if you already have the gear, and maybe you've got the film sweats and you're just like you're not sure, you don't want to waste that sheet of film. You're going to waste it anyway, but you might as well have confidence and or a smile on your face when you do it. Mm. So get out there and practice the dance. So learn everything there is to learn about your camera. Now, this is where I think some people get tripped up. They want to, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to be limited, so I'm going to buy this super expensive Chamonix with all the bells and whistles. I don't even understand what that word is, but I'm buying it because it looks it looks high end. Matt Day had one. It's never going to fail me. In fact, having more movements and things like that on a camera creates more problems. There's more things to fiddle with. I mean, you can take a great large format photo with like a paint can. You just got to poke a hole in it, you know, and load some paper in there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But whatever your tool is, learn the dance with it. So that's step one. And then step two, get enough of a photographic material you can see yourself using that you can kind of get past that hump of, wait, was that me or was that how good this film was that gave me that shot? So like, you're not going to learn, my opinion, you're not going to learn much with a box of 10 shots. So save that box of Portra 400 that you save, you put your month's allowance into, save that for later. Yeah. So buy like a 50 sheet box of something that's like 10 years expired. Or, you know, if you have more time and maybe access to darkroom space, you can buy something dirt cheap, like X-ray film, like medical and veterinary X-ray film. And you can shoot hundreds of sheets of that for the same price as like 10 really, you know, gut-wrenching moments that you're going to psych yourself out of.
Man, both that's solid answers.
Yeah.
Chris, did you soak that in? Did you get that?
And I was just like, okay, yes, I need to like, yeah. The film, that's really good advice for like, just in general, like it's okay to shoot expired when you're learning, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Okay. All right, Matt, we got another question because we got so many questions for you. And this question comes from a friend of the show, Sarah Stanello, and she asks, what is one piece of advice for young artists looking to create a body of work?
Ooh, that is a really good question. And sometimes I don't feel like I'm the one to answer this sort of thing because sometimes bodies of work just emerge, but they cannot emerge if you're not out and shooting regularly. Do whatever it takes to get yourself on a regular shooting schedule or some sort of, some people need a theme. I started with like a challenge. I'm going to shoot, it started with one roll of film a week, and then it became one sheet of film a week, and then it became a holder, and then it became a box, you know, so just for a very short period of time before film prices increased, it was run a sheet of film a day through it, you know, whatever it takes to start understanding your tools. And what's going to emerge when you do that, you're going to have some cool early successes, but what you'll see kind of rise to the top is, huh, I really do like shooting this subject matter. Mm-hmm. I should ask more about it, or using the access of the camera, learn more about the process. My earliest, like first project that kind of jettisoned me into a lot of this stuff, I started kind of nudging my way into these barber shops and taking portraits of barbers and people getting their hair cut. And it was, you know, at first, it was kind of like capitalizing on the good nature of barbers that want customers. So they're being friendly and letting people in. But also, like, I didn't understand lighting at the time. And people were going to hold still because they wanted a good haircut. So it was kind of like win-win. I could do these long exposures. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. It's true because a lot of times for me, at least, I can envision my body of work that I want to, like, produce. Mm-hmm. But it all comes down to like getting your butt out there and actually making it, you know?
It stinks because it's like, it's the least sexy advice on planet Earth about anything. But it's also, you know, you can draw parallels to it in like all other parts of the real world. Like, I want to get better at cooking. Cool. You can start with dinner.
Okay.
Yeah. So you just practice these things. Okay. I want to live a healthier lifestyle. Uh-oh. Fad diet's over. I should probably just start forming these like positive habits and doing them. So like the power of habit is it's the first thing to overcome, but then the next thing to like build that positive one.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Dang, Matt, that was good.
Yeah, it was.
Yes, especially thinking about like, you know, making it a part of your routine, like running. I hate to run, but if you make, well, I run on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and it's Friday, you know, like it's Friday, you know, large format Friday, getting out there, you know.
Exactly.
It's Friday.
And some people don't need that, and I'm so jealous of folks that don't need that kind of thing, but I need it to keep me honest and to keep, like, so kind of imposing that deadline of a video. Oh, shoot. Did I shoot anything this week? Okay, I better shoot this thing and I'll see if I can tie it into this. Oh, well, you know, Tariq's already got that shoot going on, so I should text him and see what he's... So like, it's just using the tools around, you know, the tools around you, leveraging those contacts and, you know, making work at the end of the day. It's not always great work. Unfortunately, there's no 100% guarantee, but hopefully, if you've spent this much time and effort and stuff, you'll find other enjoyment in maybe the process of it. I think that's another thing that we can get tied up in with this large format stuff is we can fall in love with process and then the results kind of like fade to the back. But it's okay. We can like it for all sorts of different reasons.
Yep.
Good
answer. All right, so this is the two-part camera question we ask all of our guests. The first part is the age-old desert island camera. You can only have one for, you know, the rest of your life. What's it going to be and why?
I guess qualifier. Do I have access to photographic materials? Like, that's no problem. Oh.
Yep. There's a little, you know, one-hour photo lab on the island that's got you covered.
Okay, cool. I mean, I just need like an Eskimo tent and a fan, but like that's okay, cool. All right, sweet. Then, yeah, it's probably going to be my, you know, my 8x10 camera, maybe like a nicer Keith Canem 8x10 camera, but it's going to be an 8x10 because I already know
there
it.
There you go. Yep.
And I'm going to make fewer mistakes with it.
Good answer. Yeah. And the second part, White Whale. Is there anything out there? I mean, you work at a camera store,
yeah,
so this
yeah.
this is probably not the best question for you, but is there anything out there that you've never, you know, had the chance to shoot or you've always wanted to own or, you know, one of those kind of, what you got? What you got cooking?
Yes, there is.
Ooh-hoo, ooh, good, good.
So I do have a White Whale camera. Don't ask me why. It's completely irrational why I want one, but one of the first camera trade shows I went to was the PDN Photo Plus Expo, where I first met Michael Rosso yep. and Dwayne Pulkey of FPP, and I got my book signed and all that stuff.
Yes.
I also met at the Kodak booth Mr. Keith Canham, the guy I just mentioned, his 8x10 camera. Well, Keith yeah. was there, nicest guy on planet Earth, but he's there with this behemoth of a camera. And it's this, it's one of his ultra large format, also known as a banquet camera. It's a 12x20 camera.
Wow.
And no completely way. Irrational. No reason on God's green earth you should want a camera that obnoxious yeah. with film that is probably $50 a shot for black and white.
Wow. Ugh.
I was smitten. Like, I saw this camera, I was like, I have to have it. I have to have it.
Yeah.
Like, he's the only guy that's going to make it. There might be a few other brands that'll make me something close, but this thing is like, this could be in my living room. Like, I don't need nice furniture or whatever, or food, whatever.
Yeah,
I just
that.
Need this. Nope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man.
That's a great answer.
Yeah. So good.
Did you, have you played with it at all? Did you get a chance to like put your hands on it?
I've played with it twice, both times at the PDN show. And like each time yeah. I'm like, I'm going to get that camera, Keith. He's like, okay, cool. Call me. Like, he knows how much they are. Like, yeah,
yeah
I'm like,
yeah,
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 whatever. Yeah. So, and like, you know, the other like insidious thing about being like an adult and like having responsibilities and all that other stuff is like, you're always able to get something sooner, but then it's like, oh, you know, am I really going to do the thing? Like, of course, you know, yeah. we don't have to eat healthy food for dinner. We can have Halloween night every night if we want to, but that's yeah. not going to last too long. So it's the practicality of, okay, do I really need this thing? No,
yep.
but you know, one day maybe the whale will show up.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. That would be amazing. Ugh.
I can't wait to see the videos if it does show.
Yeah, the videos will be titled like, oh my gosh, guys, look at this camera. And the next one's like, I'm moving out. And the next one's yeah. like, homeless photographer. Yeah. yeah.
Oh my God.
That's so good.
Well, both really great answers.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Very on brand.
Yeah. Yeah, I am a one-trick pony. Unfortunately, yeah. any conversation, like, I feel like I'm that meme where like people just like, people who just met me and I'm just holding the tuba on their face and it's like large format. Like, yeah.
I know. Yeah. That's so good.
Love it. But Matt, this has been phenomenal. Thank you yeah. for chatting with us. This is really, it's been, yeah, just awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I always love hanging out with folks that do the whole podcast thing. It was, you know, it was great meeting you guys a few years back at the Film Paideia.
I know.
Hopefully something like that will happen again.
I know. please.
I know.
I almost
don't want to say anything anymore because I'm like, oh, didn't I say that last year about more meetups? And now like folks from, you know, that watch the channel are like, oh, when are we going to do a meetup? And I'm like, I don't want to die. Like, I just, yeah.
yeah.
So we're getting there and hopefully we'll be able to do cool things. I haven't been able to do like a big, like a hands-on workshop with this stuff in a long time. Mm. And that's where it's like a whole ton of fun. And
oh, totally.
And there's just
yeah.
so little of that that's out there. So being able to offer that extra like in-person layer to everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure.
Hopefully soon. Hopefully we're in the last round of this. Who knows? But hopefully,
we'll
knock
see.
On wood, we're rounding the corner. Well, Matt, where can everybody check out your work, the podcast?
Oh, yeah. So probably the easiest way to find me, if you ever see the social media handle, that's at MAT4226. That's been my screen name since like middle school. so that's if you see that, that's me on Twitter and TikTok and Facebook and all that stuff. That's my handle there. And then you can also check out my work and links to the podcast and the YouTube channel at mirage.com. And that's MARASH.com. Yeah, all sorts of updates get posted on there. And then you can either type my first and last name into the Google and find me on YouTube, or you can just type large format photography and it'll show up.
Cool.
Great.
Cool. That's a good one. Timothy, where are you?
Guys, head over to Instagram. Instagram and Twitter. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also have some YouTube stuff going on these days. Just go to the search bar. Easiest way to find it's just to type in Timothy Makeups. Is that it for me? Yeah, that's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We're Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group you can join as well over there. And that's it for us.
That's it.
Matt, thank you. This was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Anytime you want more gas on this stuff. And I forgot that you were getting in. This was going to be your year of large format. So, Chris, send me some details. I have some film for you.
Ooh.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah,
we'll get a little LFF care package out to you.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great.
All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one.
Bye. Bye. All right, guys, that's going to wrap up this week's episode. Chris and I would love to thank Matt for coming on the show. This has been a long time coming. We're so glad we got you. It was just such a great, great time listening to your story, getting to hear about Large Format Fridays, the FPP, just your process, just an all-around great episode, and we really appreciate you taking the time to come on. Thanks again, Matt. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We're also doing our Develop and Hang nights and a bunch of other stuff over there. Like I said before, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. So all the Patreons that already support the show, thank you guys so much. We do not know what we would do without you. Again, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. That's going to be it for this week's episode. Still great to be back in this new season, a new year. We're pumped. All right, guys, we'll see you next week with an all-new episode. Later.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.